healing power of death metal. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today on the show, a program that puts guitars, mics, and keyboards into the hands of wounded veterans. And later, a live performance in our studio from the Voxare String Quartet. But to begin, in the background you were hearing a guitarist pounding out a heavy metal riff. Unlike most guitarists, though, he's a combat veteran, and he's balancing his guitar on a leg that is missing its lower third. He's a participant in a program called Music Corps, and it adds a musical component to the rehabilitation of injured veterans at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. The program's small. It's only got about 20 soldiers in its ranks, but those who participate say it's helped with their healing process and could help many others. We'll get the science behind it in a moment from neuroscientist and author Daniel Levitin, but first I'm joined by composer Arthur Bloom, who is the founder of Music Corps. Arthur, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you.
This is a pretty remarkable program, and folks can go to our website and see a video of some of these guys in action on the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org. Tell the story of how this started.
Well, I was actually invited to meet with a soldier at Walter Reed who was a musician, and he had been severely injured by a roadside bomb in Iraq and was concerned, among other things, how he was going to continue playing drums. And
He lost a foot.
He lost a foot and had a number of injuries. I mean, one of the things about roadside bombs is that, you know, they injure the whole body. I mean, there's multiple injuries that are caused by them. And in talking with him, you know, how can you not want to help? And so we tried to figure out a way that we could help him. But beyond that, I had already founded a music organization, RIME, that does music partnership programs combining orchestras and schools.
That's RIME, R-I-M-E.
That's right. Yeah. Short for, I guess, our acronym for Renovation in Music Education. And with that mindset of creating a music partnership program, I wondered if we couldn't put something together that could accommodate any soldier, regardless of music background, injury, interest, whatever, to help anyone who wanted to be part of it.
Well, now that's quite a challenge when you talk about some of the catastrophic injuries that some of these soldiers have faced, you know, loss of one or more limbs. So.
Sure.
How do you, I mean, do you have that kind of inventor streak in you where you can say, all right, how do I take this drum kit and rejigger it so a one-footed drummer can play it?
Well, part of it is us, but a lot of it is them, actually. We move heaven and earth to do whatever it takes to accommodate every single person as best we can who is in the limited set of people who are part of our program. We want to expand it, and we've had growing interest in other wounded veterans being part of it. But for those who are in the facilities where we're located, we just try to do everything we can to develop an individualized program for whatever their musical interests are, for whatever their disabilities are. So, for example, there was one guy at first, he frankly had no musical interest, said, this isn't for me. And one of the things that surprised me about the program is it turned out to be a lot of these guys with no music backgrounds who have since become among the most ardent, passionate participants and for whom it's had the greatest benefit. He initially had no music interest. He approached me then after he saw some of the other guys doing it. He wanted to do it too. He had lost an arm and a leg and wanted to learn how to play the piano. And so I arranged special music for him that would put harmonies and things he would otherwise do in the left hand and the right hand, but then we simply began teaching him piano like you would anyone else. And when we talk about the left hand, we say the left hand. The fact that it happens to be prosthetic with a robot hand didn't make a difference. And he was disciplined, and he, you know, loved it and embraced it. He told me he would come out at 2:59 a.m. in the morning when he couldn't sleep and practice and say, 3 a.m.? No, 2:59 a.m. I mean, and, you know, it's Even in a place like Walter Reed, it's a real head-turner.
Now, in a place, Walter Reed was in the news a couple of years ago, you'll recall, for, you know, this kind of horrific set of stories detailing mm-hmm. the deplorable conditions that a lot of these vets were in. Are they happy to have you there with this program, you know, as a kind of a rehabilitation of their image?
Well, a couple things. One, you know, I have to say, the staff I've met at Walter Reed are just extremely committed. So there were a lot of problems, but a lot of the guys at Walter Reed who work there are just actually hugely competent and just care a great deal. But at first, I think they thought that this might be a diversion, a nice entertainment thing. And just this last weekend, I was talking to one of the staff members at Walter Reed, who said that he's been surprised at how successful the program has been for rehabilitation. You know, what we've done has gone beyond simply trying to give them something fun to do in their spare time. This becomes a core activity that they do every day for hours and hours.
But I mean, that almost sounds like you're putting down a fun activity to do in your spare time. When you're a vet and you're in that place and you're stuck in there for months, and some of these guys for years, that's a vitally important part of their quality of life, isn't it?
Well, I think that, you know, I think music, a lot of different factors of music come together to make this successful. And frankly, it surprised them. And to be honest, it surprised me. I didn't realize that it would be I frankly didn't realize it would be as successful as it's been. Music is fun. And if they want to do heavy metal, death metal, classical rap, whatever it is, that's what we give them. And for some of these guys, that's what gets them out of their room and gets them moving and moving forward again. It gets them productive. So just the fun aspect of it is important. But then in addition, you have the discipline, the rigor.
So they're getting something from this.
They're getting something from it, yeah, definitely.
Arthur Bloom is the composer and the founder of this program, Music Core, which uses music. It's more than music education. It's actually playing music for these wounded soldiers at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. Here's an interesting comment that Matthew from Montclair, New Jersey, left on our website. Arthur, you're talking about how this all started with, you know, your friend, the drummer, the wounded vet who had lost a foot and wanted to know how he could still play drums. Matthew points out that the Rhodes piano, the Fender Rhodes, was first developed by Henry Rhodes in an effort to provide a piano that injured servicemen could build and play while in bed.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Wow.
But here's what Arthur came up with in terms of a drum kit that this wounded vet could play. And who's the guitarist in this clip who's playing along with him?
That's Greg Lohman from the band Odds Are. One of the things we do is replicate real-world music relationships. So the part of a very important part of the program is having accomplished musicians make regular visits as part of the program and work with these guys like they would work with any other musician. And that's one of the things that makes the program work, because these guys look forward to visits from accomplished musicians who they're delighted to play with. So actually, this particular drummer, his mother told me, I don't know if he knows, his mother told me that after every visit, he's in, quote, hog heaven. So, you know, at a place like Walter Reed, where you might otherwise be miserable, that's something.
This is a clip of the project known as Music Core in action. And again, you can see the full video of the Music Core project. There's a link on the Soundcheck page of our website, wnyc.org. Arthur Bloom, the composer, is the founder of the program. Let's bring in Daniel Levitin, the neuroscientist and cognitive psychologist, also happens to be a former music producer and a best-selling author. His latest book is The World in Six Songs: How the Musical Brain Created Human Nature. And Dan is our go-to guy whenever we start talking about music and the brain on Soundcheck. Hi, Dan.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. So, I mean, you've heard Arthur talking about this project. What do you think?
It's a wonderful story. It's a wonderful use of personalized and individualized therapy. You know, music therapy is just beginning to take off as a respected discipline. The use of music either in listening or in performing contexts to help people with various physical or psychological ailments. And this is a wonderful example of the proper use of music therapy, I think.
Now, how different is it from, you know, a lot of music therapy is you listen to music. This is different. I mean, and Arthur, you're not a musical therapist, right?
Right. We take an intentionally you know, for lack of a better word, non-therapeutic approach to therapy, in that we replicate real-world music relationships, whether it's bandmates or producer-artists, and that keeps the guys enthusiastic and doing it. And so, as one of these guys mentioned, it's therapeutic because it's not therapy. I mean, we don't come in with white smocks on. We come in with that heavy metal guitar player they want to work with. And we work on these, you know, spend hours and hours working on projects like you would with anybody else. And, you know, all these therapeutic side effects, especially for, you know, for guys who've experienced traumatic brain injury and for whom music has a special benefit, therefore are driven to get, you know, even more healing.
Dan, that's the point of traumatic brain injury. A lot of these guys have lost limbs, but they also suffer brain injuries as well. You've written...
Right, as you were pointing out, roadside bombs are not very selective in the injuries they... Mm-hmm. As Arthur pointed out, they're not very selective, right? I mean, you get damaged all over your body, including the brain.
Right. One of the things I've learned is just even for those soldiers who haven't fractured their skull or there's no other... simply by the concussive nature of a roadside bomb rattles the brain in the skull, and it is so common it's been called the signature injury of the Iraq War, TBI or traumatic brain injury. And so it's
so Dan, is music particularly useful in cases like this because of the way the brain processes musical information?
Yes, I think music has the potential to be particularly useful because musical circuits are distributed widely throughout the brain. So because of all the overlapping and redundant neural circuits, an injury that's localized to one portion of the brain won't take the whole system out. This is not the case we've seen with generally with things like language or with motor activity, where a very focal lesion can cause profound disruption. Music seems to be able to bootstrap itself back into working.
Is that why, you know, people who have advanced Alzheimer's and stuff, very often one of the last things they lose is their ability to remember songs from their youth?
Part of it is the redundancy and the wide distribution throughout the brain. The other part of it is motivational. Music means a lot to people, and part of that is the social context. By Arthur bringing in other people, he's exploiting a property of music that's rather special within the arts. So if you think about painting, for example, usually painters paint in isolation, but music is a social activity. It's amenable to doing it with other people. And that brings in a whole other layer of motivation and reward.
And in terms of, you know, what we know from research, you know, what does it tell us about music therapy, about, you know, how far you can really take it?
Well, research on music therapy is really just beginning to come into its own. It's a field that's been around a long time, but we've only recently been seeing real evidence as opposed to anecdotes, you know, real studies.
Right.
So I think it's too early to tell what the limits are. But from what we know about neuroscience and neurology, it has the potential to help people in a variety of situations. We've seen some studies that listening to music or performing music can actually raise your pain thresholds, meaning the amount of pain that it takes to cause you discomfort is higher, mm-hmm. right? So you can get by with pain and be nonplussed when music is involved. And that may be in part due to the dopamine system. Music activates and modulates dopamine, a so-called feel-good hormone in the brain.
Arthur.
There's one guy, actually, that we work with who he's got a titanium plate in his head and a traumatic brain injury. Just from working with him this last week, what's amazing and what he tells me is that he's able to remember the music that we do together better than he's able to remember words and other things. He's also able to remember things that happen around the music making. So we recently were putting together a song. And the word we just used was sort of mental calisthenics, as he concentrates on the chords and remembers them. But he remembers everything else that happens in the room and all of the other sort of ancillary things that happen around his work with the music, whereas outside of that, he doesn't have that same memory. And he also described to me that he often hears sounds that cause pain, that actually have pain go down his spine, but not with music.
Hmm. Yeah, we call this auditory allodynia. Certain sounds cause a painful reaction, and it's a recognized neurological syndrome. For some reason, music activates some different systems than regular old sound or than voices or natural sounds. Music seems to, in part, activate a preserved and reserved pathway that's just for music in the brain.
I have so many questions, it's hard to know where to go next. But let me ask a practical question. It's hard to learn an instrument, even if you have the complete use of 100% of your brain and your limbs.
This is one of the things that's blown me away probably more than anything else.
Don't these guys get frustrated? I mean, isn't that, that's something you have to be concerned about,
right? If you were in the hospital for 2 years or 3 years and you had nothing else to do, and then someone comes in with a music program, they install a recording studio, you have musicians come and visit, these guys get good, and they spend hours and hours doing it. And, you know, they tell me the alternative is, you know, there's the morning appointments. The alternative is nothing. And so this gets them out of their room, working, moving forward again. They love it, but they actually get good. I mean, they're producing good work, good stuff.
And we'll actually...
And it's got them using all different parts of their bodies and all different parts of their brains. It's not just the part of the brain that moves fingers and legs, but the part of the brain that's thinking about emotions, thinking about sounds they've heard before, thinking about life experience and trying to translate that into sound. Music is a really multifaceted and multidimensional entity.
All right. In a moment, we're actually going to speak to one of the guys who is finally, after 3 years in Walter Reed, on his way out, who has been a part, Arthur, of your program. I mentioned at the top of the show you've dealt with about 20 guys over the past year or so. When we come back, let's talk about how much wider this can go. How do you pay for a program like this? How do you pay to expand it? So that's all still to come as we continue our conversation on Soundcheck today about veterans and this remarkable music healing program called Music Corps. We're speaking with composer and founder Arthur Bloom and with the neuroscientist and author Daniel Levitin. And still to come on the program, a new spin on the phrase office romance. The Vaxare String Quartet, whom you're hearing in the background, are a group of two couples, and they join us to talk about the intersection of personal and professional relationships in music, and they'll play live. This song needs a video from you. Join Soundcheck and the Brooklyn-based group The Fiery Furnaces for our first music video contest. Here's a tip to get you going.
I'm Moby, and the first music video from my album Wait For Me was directed by David Lynch, and it's called Shot in the Back of the Head. Back when MTV actually played music videos, production value was quite important because people were watching it on big TVs. And now everything's on YouTube. And so you're watching a music video this big, or you're watching it on your iPhone. So the production value, production doesn't really mean anything anymore. What's important is the idea. I mean, you think of something like that OK Go video, you know, where they're on the treadmills. No production value, it's just a static camera and a bunch of treadmills. But the idea was so clever, it was a great music video.
Check out details for the music video contest on our website at WNYC.org. Deadline is August 31st. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. More now on the potential of music to heal physical and psychological wounds. You're hearing another performance by a participant in Music Corps. a program at the Walter Reed Army Medical Center that encourages wounded vets to play music as part of their recovery. This soldier is playing the left-hand part of this piece with a prosthetic limb, and the music has been written for just that purpose. We're joined again by the program's founder, composer Arthur Bloom, and the cognitive scientist and former music producer, Daniel Levitin. And I raised a couple of questions, Arthur, and they're sort of linked just before the break. One is, you know, how do you pay for this? And then the other is, if it's working, how do you expand it so that more people can take advantage of it?
Well, the first part is a good question. We are seeking funding. It was something of an experiment at first. It frankly succeeded better than we anticipated. And we very much want to ramp up. So we invite people, of course, to visit our website at musicorps.net, musicorps.net, and spread the word. We are looking for funding.
What does it cost to get the program off the ground?
Well, to get the program off the ground was pretty much a labor of love.
Right.
You know, I sort of think of this like, you know, the people who
put
together
donated
movies on their credit cards.
But somebody had to donate
the
drum kit, the keyboard that these guys are playing.
Right. We got equipment donated, computers from Apple, some music equipment from M Audio that's been very helpful. Some other companies have been very generous. And we've had some people chip in here or there to cover some basic expenses. But to expand, I mean, one of the things, you know, that there's so much demand and this could really do a great deal of good. I'd like to expand the program without diluting it. One of the reasons why it works is that we replicate these real world music relationships. We don't just provide, you know, a 45-minute session every now and then. And a lot of that goes beyond what you can ask someone to do merely as a volunteer. So
the bigger it gets,
right.
We need
to keep the quality, the intensity, the rigor, all of that going.
We're joined on the line now by Sergeant Nicholas Firth, who is in fact in his last day there at Walter Reed. Nick, congratulations on that.
Thanks a lot.
Congratulations, Nick.
What did you get out of the Music Corps program?
It was a way for me to start getting prepared for being back. You know, to normal, being back in regular civilian life. So music's a very, very big part of my life. And after being injured and not really being able to walk for a year and a half, it was a little demotivating. But then, you know, meeting somebody like this who had, you know, that same passion and zeal for music that I did, had helped me out, helped get me going again, so to speak.
Now, what was your instrument? Were you the drummer in the video?
I was the drummer.
You're the drummer.
Yep.
And what has it done for you? I mean, does it make you more comfortable with the actual prosthetic foot that you're able to kind of do this very familiar kind of physical pattern?
Well, for me, it wasn't so much being comfortable with the prosthesis. I mean, I got fairly used to that, you know, on my own, you know, rather quickly. But it was very encouraging and comforting to know that it's something that was a big part of my life that I won't have to give up.
Mm-hmm. And when you, I mean, you're in your last day, when you go home, I mean, you know, is it your intention to continue? Do you have to use a special drum kit? Will you be able to go back to the one that was in the garage or the basement or whatever?
I can still use the same kit. I've just got to wear a running leg.
So there are different prostheses for different occasions.
Yep.
For different uses. Nick, congratulations on your last day there at Walter Reed. What else does the future hold for you, you think?
Right now, you know, I've got a year left on a business degree from UNCC, so I'm thinking of pursuing that. And I'm actually considering going to prosthetic school. I interned in the prosthesis lab here in Walter Reed for about 5 months. Just absolutely loved it. And now considering going into that field.
Nick, best of luck to you. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot.
Congratulations, Nick.
Sergeant Nicholas Firth is, I guess we'll call him a graduate of the Music Corps program
Walter Reed. Actually, beyond the graduate, he's been a participant, but he's agreed now in the future to visit and actually work as one of our artists in residence from time to time with other guys. He already does that informally, but, you know, someone of his talent and experience could just be awfully helpful with some of these other guys.
Daniel Levitin, let me read you a comment from Mara in New Jersey. She writes, "What we're talking about is occupational therapy, taking what is meaningful and purposeful to the client and using it for therapeutic means. Is it important that the type of music these guys are playing, and so far I'm using the word guys, so far it has been all guys. Is it important that it be, you know, a style of music that they are already familiar with, comfortable with, in love with?
Well, I think so, and this underscores a larger issue in music therapy, whether it's somebody coming in and helping people make music or helping people to listen to music that will challenge or comfort or support them. You have to listen to the client. You have to listen to the person who's being treated. You don't want to have a situation where the patient goes to the doctor and the doctor says, take two Joni Mitchells and call me in the morning, because music is so personal. And most of us have a pretty good sense of what music we like and how to use it. And, you know, we have a kind of naive theory or folk theory of our own neurology, of our own neurochemistry. We may not know that it's dopamine or serotonin being activated, but we know when we put on James Brown, we feel like dancing. And we can't be in a bad mood while he's you know, playing.
Unless you hate James Brown.
Exactly.
Who hates James Brown, though?
But isn't, I mean, but that certainly has to be one of the things that Arthur, that you face, which is, you know, one guy's sonic opium is another guy's sonic itching powder.
Case by case, and we give them, we try to develop a program around whatever it is that they like best. At the same time, we've been surprised. You know, I can tell you two cases. One guy with no music background discovered Beethoven. He started watching performances by not just anybody, but Wilhelm Kempf late at night on YouTube, and just became obsessed with Beethoven and started practicing and learning Beethoven sonatas on the piano very rapidly. People thought he'd been playing for years, when in fact he'd just been playing for months. And for him, I mean, he just had this unusual and innate sophistication with it. He described struggle and triumph in the Beethoven he heard, which could equally describe his own journey.
That is unusual. Dan, does age matter? I mean, by the time these guys are 19, 20, 22, 24, whatever it is when they enter the hospital, has the sort of the plasticity of the brain, the ability to, you know, kind of take on new things like this started to weaken?
Well, age does matter, and the plasticity has started to weaken, but that doesn't mean that you can become too old to learn. You can learn to play an instrument or learn to do new things at any age. It just requires a little more willpower, and certainly these guys have that. One of the things that's making it work, I think, among a constellation of other features, is that they gain a sense of mastery. They've had so much of their world yanked out from under them. Suddenly they wake up flat on their back, unable to have the body that they had just months before. Some of them can't walk. Some of them can't move in ways that they could move before. And to be able to master something, to learn something new and do something that they feel responsible for is a big part of the recovery process.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I have to tell you, just in my experience with them, that really cuts to the core of what a lot of this is, because these guys have been so active and have had so much responsibility, and all of a sudden, you know, everything is blown up, and life really just stops for them. And so they're hungry to continue learning and to move forward.
Now, Sergeant Nicholas Firth was telling us that, you know, he intends, well, you were telling us he intends to come back and be
right.
a part of the program. As the program continues, mm-hmm. are you hoping that that's what happens, that it kind of, you know, you kind of recycle these guys, they come back and help the next generation?
Nicholas Firth is also just, you know, he is an extraordinarily talented musician. We want very high quality musicians to come and work with these guys. So we're looking for, you know, we're trying to find people, recruit musicians who would be good for this. But one of the requirements is just a certain level of musical excellence, because that's
so,
part of what they do.
So the New York guitarist Dominic Frasca, whose music we're hearing a bit of in the background, somebody on your short list to get down there at Walter Reed and work
He's
with
very
someone.
Much on our short list. We've been chatting, and we look forward to Dominic being part of this program.
The program is called Music Core, and it was founded by composer Arthur Bloom, who's with me here in the studio, uses music, don't call it music therapy, the actual playing of music as part of the rehabilitation of wounded vets there at Walter Reed.
Playing and creation and recording and production.
And Daniel Levitin, the neuroscientist and best-selling author, his latest book is called The World in Six Songs. has been with us on the phone as well. Dan, thank you for being with us. Arthur, thank you for joining us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Still to come, it takes two to tango and two couples to make a Vaxare string quartet. They'll join us to play live next. Tomorrow on the show, our weekly Soundcheck Smackdown debate focuses on the album versus the single. Find out whether the album still has power in the digital age. Tomorrow on Soundcheck.